And if you were just to ask an average Canadian, like, what are your top five U.S. places? This would not be the list. For
no, no, it's not.
Do you love to travel?
Do you love road trips?
Do you love finding hidden treasures in towns all over the USA? Hi, I'm Joshua.
And I'm Craig. Welcome to Treasures of Our Town, the podcast that explores unique and charming towns scattered throughout the United States.
Join us as we venture into some of the country's most intriguing destinations, uncovering hidden gems and local secrets along the way.
On today's episode, we're going to get someone to come across the border legally from the north. We're going to speak to a Canadian, Josh, a Canadian.
Are we gonna, we're actually going to let him in?
That's well, nice. Let him in on the show at least anyway. Let him in on the show at least. So.
yes, we're excited to talk to Jeff May. We'll talk about him a little bit
more
in a bit here. But you know what? You're here for the travel content. I know you're just like, you listen to the Treasures of Our Town podcast and we hope, and you're just like writing, you're writing down notes. You're like, oh my gosh, we need to go there. Yeah. We need to go there. Oh, that sounds like an amazing place to visit. Like, we hope that you are inspired by what we put out every 2 weeks. But, you know, we know you're really curious about what's going on in our lives. That's another reason you probably tune in every 2 weeks.
Yeah, just to see, where's Craig this week? Or where's Josh this week? Is Josh still at work? You know,
oh my gosh.
By the way, Josh, speaking of work, I saw a video of you on your Instagram feed.
Yes.
And I know how competitive you are. I know you're a competitive natured human being. And so I saw you racing men that were half your age in sack races at your work, and you fell over. And did you hurt your shoulder? What happened there?
Oh, my gosh. Well, that's a good segue, because I'll tell you about that.
Yeah.
Because I think we should have a new tradition. I think we should start a new tradition.
Okay.
And I listen to other podcasts, and you know what they do is that when they do this opening section, which I call, or we call, the banter.
The banter.
They have traditions, and their traditions are usually like, give me the high and the low. Oh. Highs and lows.
Oh.
But here's the thing, Craig. I don't think we should call it highs and lows.
No.
It's a treasure. It's a, you know, a travel podcast, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So I was thinking about like what could be considered a low, and I got it. I think I got it.
Yeah. What?
It's when you're delayed, you know, you're at the airport, delayed 2 hours. So, 3 hours. See, like, so it's like, hey, Craig, over the last 2 weeks since the last podcast, what was your delays? What was your big delays?
Oh, my.
What was your lows?
What was my lows? That's good. That's good. And what about the highs?
Yeah. The highs.
Yeah.
Where have you got bumped to first class?
Yes. Your upgrades. Upgrades.
Yeah. Where have you, what's upgrades? Bumped you? What's bumped you to first class? What's giving you the upgrades?
All right, Josh. Josh, like sounds that? Good, mate. Sounds good. I'll start with you then. Okay. What's been some of your upgrades this?
Oh,
this,
you want to go upgrades first?
Upgrades. I'll go upgrades for you first. Yeah.
Okay. How have I been upgraded to first class? Well, you know, I travel for work and I don't do it as much as I used to. I used to do it every other week.
Yeah.
But sometimes I should say I put myself on the road because I'm the one that like makes the schedule. so sometimes I put myself on the road to, if people don't know, I speak primarily in schools for a living. I'm kind of like a motivational speaker, but I'm not like Matt Foley, the motivational speaker. I don't live in a van down by the river. That's you, Craig. So I guess my upgrade these past 2 weeks is I got to go on a little short little road trip. Even if it's a work road trip, it's still a road trip.
Yeah. And
road trips are fun. So speaking of Canada, I was 10 minutes from Canada.
Really?
That's how far I was. It's faster. Get this, Greg. It's faster for me to drive to Chicago than it is for me to drive to this place, which was Roseau, Minnesota, which is 10 miles. A little town 10 miles south of the Canadian border.
Wow.
And I went with my good friend Dahlia Jones.
Yep.
And I convinced her. I guess it hasn't been that long because it was this fall. I convinced her to go geocaching with me.
Oh, so tell me, Josh, is that your latest video that just came out last weekend? Oh.
This is not like a promotion, okay?
No. I understand but if people want to actually see, like, visualize this better, then they can go to your YouTube channel or in other words, as well, if people already watched your YouTube channel, which they probably should anyway,
yeah,
then this is you speaking about it. So
yeah,
oh, very cool.
So we, you know, I said, hey, you know, this is long drive, and you know what breaks up long drives? Geocaching.
Yeah,
I targeted like four really good ones, and they were good. It was a virtual and three great caches, and we just had so much fun. And my coworkers are so, they're in the rules of improv. They're yes and, right?
Yeah.
So I throw something at my coworkers and they don't just like stare at me blankly.
No.
They're like, yes, yes, totally. Like they meet my energy. Mm-hmm. If you see the video,
you'll see how
much she like goes along for the fun. So that was my upgrade.
Very, very cool.
That was my
very, very cool. Class. Very cool. Very cool.
Okay. Now, oh, it's funny that you bring this up because I was going to talk about it.
Yeah.
What I thought would be an upgrade.
Your delay.
What I thought would be an upgrade actually became a delay. I was delayed. So we had a fun day at work. Mm. We had some intense, and let me just say, intense sack races.
I saw it. I saw some of them. What about the bingo? You had like dancing bingo.
Oh, that was fun.
Wow.
That was dance party bingo.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was actually really fun. It's so funny. If you saw these videos, you're like, where in the world do you work?
Exactly. Like, right? are you working at Google, like with all these younger people as well? Because there's a lot of young people too at your work, Josh. I will say that too.
So I know.
A lot of young people.
Good young energy.
Yes, yes.
Well,
and they match you and you match them, just saying.
Well, we had sack races. Yeah. And everybody that participated in the sack races, I'll just note, we're all younger than me.
Of course.
So it's time for the sack race. I get my sack on. I don't know. It's like 30 feet. And I'll just say I started slow. I was disappointed. Yeah. They said go. And I was like behind. But then I was a high school track star. The hopping started kicking in.
Yeah.
And then I was neck to neck, neck and neck.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm going to win this Chick-fil-A gift card.
Is that what you win? A Chick-fil-A gift card?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to win this. And every time I do things like this, my mind is always like, it's a mental game, Craig. Mm-hmm. I'm always like, you know, I'm a fan of Survivor.
Yeah, yeah.
The Amazing Race. I'm always like, I play a mental game that I am on Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And if I win, I get the hidden immunity idol. Like I'm playing mental games.
In your mind.
I build it up bigger in my mind and then my body follows. And you will see in this video, I dive.
It's true what they say though, Josh. Like it is the power of the mind. And even though you're twice the age of some of those people there, and I will say, because you are, because they're 20-year-olds we're talking about here. And you're mid-40s now, Josh. You know, you're not as old as me, but you are mid-40s.
Getting to upper.
40s. I'm 50 next year, just saying. Anyway.
Good for you. Okay.
I know.
Anyway, I'll finish my story.
Okay.
I dive, Craig, head first. And when a sack race, you're not landing on your feet. There's no way you can land on your feet when you dive.
Yeah.
And I just landed really hard on my shoulder.
Well, you did put your arm out to actually like to get further in the race. You put your arm out. So therefore, then your arm crossed the line and took down the line itself. So to prove to everyone that you were first. So
did you notice when I was on the ground? I had the number one. I was like, I won it. Like number one on my hand.
You did. But that was just the heat, wasn't it? Then you had a final.
That was the first. Yeah, I can't believe I competed in the finals.
And then you competed in the finals, easily won the finals. Oh, you killed the finals. You were ready at the beginning. I saw that too. And I will say this, Josh, the way the flags were set up, you didn't even have to put your arm out. You didn't have to dive for the finish. You went head first across. And did you, I don't know if you saw it or whatever, but to me, you look like one of those, what do you call it? Like in California when they put the mask around their face, you know, those red sort of bandanas around their face. And that's what you look like, putting a red bandana around your face to try and.
Yeah. This all sounds like it was an upgrade to first class.
Yeah.
But the amount of pain my shoulder is in right now and the pain in my back, I'm going to have to go to the chiropractor.
Really?
I am not moving well. And it's a lot of pain. So.
Well, Josh,
even though I won.
Josh, I never actually believed in chiropractors at all until I went to one. Now I stand corrected. Ba-dum-tsh. I know. Right? I'm a crack up.
Okay.
Anyway.
I want to hear how you've been upgraded to first class. over these past 2 weeks?
Well, my upgrade itself has been predominantly because obviously I play a lot of Munzee and geocaching as well, but I've been doing a lot of Munzee on a daily basis at the moment, yeah. You see. And to me personally, an upgrade for me, and when we talk about upgrades, we're talking about not something that you're lucky about or whatever, but something that it's a highlight of your week. For me, Josh, the highlight of the week was the new release of the mailbox called the Munz DeLorean mailbox.
That's a good one.
If people don't understand it, you don't play Munzee, that's fine, it's not a problem. But what it is, it's a virtual object and you can basically capture it every single day. It gives you points every single day. And you take it with you because I'm leaving on Saturday, Josh. I'm leaving again. I'm heading west through Pennsylvania, meeting a few friends, et cetera, and going from there. But yeah, so this mailbox can travel with me, Josh, every single day as well. I can take it with me. And then I get from May the 4th, because obviously Star Wars Day, Munz DeLorean. From May the 4th, we start to get prizes or special things that happen when we actually capture this Munz DeLorean every single day. But the DeLorean itself, like, it looks so sick,
it does.
So sweet. You know,
imagine, like, it's like a DeLorean that's mixed with Star Wars.
Yes.
Mandalorian. It's Mandalorian, a Munz DeLorean.
Yeah. A Munz DeLorean, a Mandalorian and the Star Wars as well. So
I saw that you created some stickers. Absolutely. You created some stickers. And you're like, you probably created just for me because you're I'm going to make this because I know at least one person will buy them.
That's exactly my thought process, Josh. I thought for sure, like, Josh needs something to remember this by and he'll purchase these stickers. So there are stickers, etc., in the freeze tag store for those too. But not just that, but coming up as part of the ongoing sort of prizes, there's these things called, what's it called, Josh? The new scatter that came out. I'm not sure. Again, it's Star Wars themed though. It's Java the Hutt. But they call it Java the Hutt because he's coffee related, see?
That's funny.
So it's Java the Hutt. Now, if you capture a Java the Hutt, he scatters, you know that boba teas? He scatters boba tea, but it's called Boba Fett. So it's actually the boba teas themselves, but it's in the shape, the face shape of Boba Fett. So it looks really, really cool too. So yeah, so that's I've made stickers of those as well. I've been asked for stickers for those. So
if you're a Star Wars fan, like, this is the time to maybe check out Munzee because there's going to be a lot of Star Wars. I mean, they've already have like Star Wars, other Star Wars characters too.
Yes, they do.
Like,
they do. Yeah.
Like, Lou's,
I can't think of her, but there's Darth Vardaman, and that's Rob. He's Darth Vardaman, the president. And then, Lou Vader. Is it Lou Vader? No, Lou. I can't think now.
Princess Lua.
Princess Lua. That's it. Princess Lua. And if you don't know, Lou, she works and is also married with Rob, but she works for Munzee as well. And she loves riding bikes. And she's good, Josh. She's really good. And she's got like $1,000 worth of bike gear and stuff that she travels all over the world with on her bikes. So on her head is actually two bike wheels. And then for the buns, yeah. And then when you cap her, those wheels, they go off her head and they scatter so you can cap the wheels separately. So that's really cool. So
that's fun.
Yeah. So yeah, definitely get in. If you're into Star Wars, you should, and things like that too. This game, Munzee, you know, it's a great game. I love it, Josh, personally.
It's whimsical.
It really is.
So, okay, Craig.
Yes.
How have you been delayed? What's your low?
Well, my delay actually happened last night, Josh.
What happened?
So my wife currently, she's away in California for work purposes and stuff as well. So yesterday, you know, I thought I'll go for a drive around, collect my Munzees that I do, and I thought I'd stop into my local supermarket here, grab myself some dinner. So I grabbed myself some dinner, and it was – so, I mean, you call them breaded shrimp, but I call them prawns. Anyway, I bought these prawns themselves from the supermarket thinking, you know, look, I'm at the Jersey Shore. And I had them on a beautiful salad, you know, fresh salad, and everything else everything's fine. It actually tasted really good, et cetera, not a problem. And then an hour and a half after I ate them, I was visiting the bathroom and everything was, so it was not good. So I'm not going to buy seafood again from a supermarket here in good old US of A, just saying that. So that would be my delay.
Yes, you're going to have to do what we've talked about on this podcast and like, only buy seafood when you can see the sea.
Well, I can almost. I'm at the Jersey Shore, for goodness sake. But then again, it's not. It's a brown colour. It's not the sea like we saw in Alabama. I'll just say that, you know, with the white sand and the gorgeous beaches. Yes. And the man, that was a great trip. Anyway, I digress, as I always do. But yeah, so no, I'm not going to be doing that again. And all I'll say, it delayed. It got delayed for about an hour and a half, and then it was expedited, you know, out both ends of the thing. So there you go.
Well, there you have it. That's our bump to first class and our delays. What do you like that? What do you think? I think that's kind of
I like it.
Kind of a good framing for
what's your upgrade? What's your delay? I like it.
Our banter.
Exactly. All right. Exactly.
Greg.
Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah.
It's time to go north.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to go to the great north. It's time to get a perspective from our first and maybe our only ever Canadian Canadian guests, because you know this podcast, we focus on the United States.
Yeah,
we're very U.S. centric. But guess what? This host is a Canadian, but he's been throughout the U.S. quite a bit. So we're going to bring on our friend, now your friend, Jeff May.
Hello. I am doing great.
It is so good to see your face. I think the last time I saw your face, we were on a mountain together in Washington.
It was beautiful.
On the edge of death. What was that? What was that geocache called? I remember. Living on the edge.
Living on the edge.
In the words of Aerosmith.
That was awesome.
Every time he needs to actually do a song of some sort. Jeez. Anyway. Jeff, mate, it's been a longer time since I've seen you, buddy.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's been Jer Woodstock Cincinnati, maybe.
Yeah, I think that was the first Jer Woodstock. Yeah. I think that was the last
time. That's the last time.
In person.
We're talking about here, Josh. So, I mean,
That's 6 years ago.
Mm.
So,
time flies.
I know. So, we have Jeff on the show. Jeff, I don't know if you've listened to our show. Maybe you have. Maybe you haven't. Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you for saying that. Because we listen to your podcast, Jeff.
Yeah, we do. Thank you.
Anyway, Jeff is a geocacher. He is a podcaster. He is a traveler. He's a road tripper.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, hey, we should bring Jeff on. He also has a really nice microphone.
Exactly.
So even if he doesn't have good stuff to say, at least he's going to sound good.
He will. Because Jeff, I listened to your podcast again the other day driving on a road trip. I love road trips and podcasts.
You see? Oh, so yes, absolutely.
Just let everyone know who doesn't know. Just tell us a bit about yourself, your podcast, et cetera, go for it, mate.
So I'm Jeff, and my caching name is The Bruce Zero. Everybody asks me if my name is Bruce. It's not Bruce, but I'll answer to Bruce. There's a long story about how that name came about, but The Bruce Zero, and I run Cache the Line on YouTube, and it's kind of a brand spread over social media as well. Just, you know, another one of those people out there who loves to promote this hobby of geocaching and making videos, being creative, and trying to promote great community and good fun and adventure and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I've been caching since 2009 when I started in May with the iPhone 3GS. Only an iPhone. Oh, man, those were the days.
Yeah.
And the rest is history. Yep.
There you go. How many finds you got under your belt now, mate, do you think? Roughly.
Coming close to 21,000 now.
Oh, diehard. He's a diehard.
This is kind of on the low end of a lot of people in Southern Ontario.
Wow.
We have power trails everywhere.
Wow.
People are up 30, 40,000. That was a pretty good average on our high end caching groups.
Jeez. Well, you're so humble, but
it's different for everybody.
I'm a quality guy. I'll just
here you go,
finder. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? The one thing that didn't help with that number was doing the ET Highway. That was almost 3,000 caches out of that.
For those that don't know. That are not necessarily geocachers. You're here for the travel, maybe, and you're along for the ride for geocaching. Like when you're 20,000 geocaches, that is a lot. That is a diehard.
It's a lot of smileys.
It's a lot of. Think about all the locations. Those are all 20,000 different locations.
Places on this planet.
Places on this planet. That's it. You've been, in the words of Johnny Cash, you've been everywhere. at least. In Canada and beyond.
So, and yeah. Jeff, you've got a podcast. Tell us about the podcast, mate. It comes out. Is it weekly, fortnightly? What's your podcast going to be?
Well, so I had my YouTube videos, and I was doing videos, and then COVID hit, and so it was a lot harder to get out and make and get new footage for new videos. So I just started doing live hangouts pretty much every Friday night. Did a TGI Friday, well, a couple times a month or so. And then so TGIF Friday evening, hangout live, chat with people, do various topics, did some online escape rooms and puzzle boxes, that kind of stuff. Things you can do just on hand, interviews and stuff. And once we could start getting back out again, I just kind of kept it going, and it became a produced podcast. So with the changes in life since COVID, it's come now to approximately about a once a month podcast all about geocaching, and trying to focus on the topic of more adventurous types of things. And it's just been going since then, and life is still getting busy.
it's called TGIF.
TGIF Geocaching Radio.
Yeah. Radio. Geocaching Radio.
But you're not on the radio yet. But you're calling it radio.
Well, I listen to it on the radio in my car, just saying. You know, because I've got Bluetooth. Yeah.
So. Online radio. I listen to my local radio station online too.
Exactly. See, so. And you said before you're in Ontario in Canada, Jeff, as well?
Yeah, Southern Ontario, about an hour west of Toronto. Oh. If you know Ontario, we have the Highway 401, which is like the spine of Ontario, which goes right from the west end close to Detroit all the way up to Ottawa. And just one huge highway at some points splitting into, I think, 7 or 9 lanes, something or more than that, something like that. Huge around Toronto.
Wow.
But that's the spine. And my city is right on that spine.
Nice.
I would say, Jeff, that the spirit of your geocaching brand is very much along the lines of adventure, outdoor adventure, like more the woods, mountains. You know, seas. You know, I would say for me, like, my content's a little bit more like a mishmash of lots of things in geocaching, but you are very much like outdoor adventure. Would you say that's true?
Yeah. There's something about, you know, visiting places you haven't been before, seeing things, there's one thing I love about tree climbs that I like to say. It's like every time you climb a tree, you're going where no one has gone before.
That's so true.
Unless you're a cache owner if you're finding a cache that's already there, then you might be a second or third or whatever. But like if you think about it, nobody has climbed this tree before. This is the first time you've set really foot here.
No normal people climb trees these days. Mm-hmm. No normal people do. Only geocaching, pretty much. That's it.
Well, just yesterday I climbed a tree for a friend. He's a ham radio guy, and he wanted to get his antenna higher in the trees. So he's like, hey, come over and help us.
When you do this intense stuff, though, Jeff, do you have like specialist equipment and stuff as well?
And you know, I wouldn't say I'm super intense. I just like to go for some of those higher terrain adrenaline style adventures. And it's definitely not like jumping from a plane. So you can cut this part out. Sky jumping?
Skydiving. No,
skydiving.
Skydiving, yeah.
It's definitely not like skydiving or anything like that. It's just I like, I've climbed a couple of tall mountains, nothing extreme, but, trails that the public can go to if they want to, doing long hikes, going for kayak trips, solo trips, solo road trips, like just kind of things that are reasonable for somebody to do alone and still have an adventure and memory to be able to tell people and whatnot.
Do you abseil, Jeff? Do you abseil?
I have never abseiled.
Oh, no. Oh, Jeff, you've never abseiled.
What the heck is that?
You don't know what abseiling is?
Abseil.
Abseiling.
Abseil.
Abseiling is where you actually go down with a rope down a cliff face.
Oh, you mean rappelling.
It's called abseiling. The official term is the rest of the world calls it abseiling, except for the U.S.
Rappelling.
Rappelling and rock climbing and stuff. Yeah. Okay. In Ontario, we've got the Niagara Escarpment, which is a nice, long, relatively small kind of cliff geological feature. And there's a lot of spots there. So there's lots of caves and lots of cliff walls. We've got caches along the trail that goes along there, the Bruce Trail. And so there's a lot of Ontario's got its fair share of small to medium sized geological adventure places as well, which is really nice.
Have you always been a outdoor adventurer even before you were a geocacher, or did geocaching kind of make you into that?
I think geocaching kind of opened the door to that. Nice. Yeah. I grew up in a computer family, so I've been sitting at a computer most of my life, programming and doing art and graphics and stuff. And then geocaching came along, and you take that technology outside, and
That. The
door just flew open.
that's so really cool. That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
So, what would you say is your favorite thing about geocaching?
That is a big question.
He hasn't been abseiling. He does do tree climbs. He likes a long hike. What else is there, mate? Well,
maybe I can rephrase this because we always say it's a place it brings you the adventure. It's a lot of things. So it's probably hard to nail one thing down. Mm. I guess I'm more curious about what kind of traveler are you? Let's go on the down the travel. Are you a road tripper? Are you I'm going to fly to that place and explore that place. Like what you said, a lot of solo road trips. Is that your, what's your style of travel?
I think the thing that's prompted a lot of my travels has been statistics and, rarity. So if there's certain caches that are out there that are very rare, like if it's a rare difficulty terrain or it's like something that highlights a location, something special about that location, then that's usually the draw to go. Like when I did that long road trip around to central Ontario, that was a couple of days and sleeping in the car overnight. And I had a rental car at the time and it was winter in the north and it was solo out in the wild. Like it was way out there.
Yeah.
But I was up for the adventure and I just mapped it out and planned everything. And it was really because there were a number of virtual caches that I wanted to get, which are very rare, and a few DTs along the way, and for fizzy grids and whatnot. So it's pretty much statistics and, you know, the challenge of just going out and being able to do that.
Interesting.
The start of it pretty much all happened because what started Cache the Line at the time, Chasing the Ironman, was my mother was diagnosed with some ALS, and so she was hospitalized. But she loves nature. She loved nature. She loved like birds and flowers and all that stuff. And so, while I was already geocaching at the time, I was able to encourage her by bringing her the stories of places that I've been, showing her photos and sometimes videos and things like that. And so that was something that kind of helped me help her through that time, and that kind of launched this idea of being able to provide something that others could live vicariously through. You know, if people can't necessarily climb a big hill or a mountain or go out during sunset on a paddle on a lake and things like that, like that's the kind of stuff that I wanted to be able to capture and be able to provide something for other people to enjoy, you know, seeing things they might not be able to see. So that kind of launched the whole channel.
That's really cool. That's really beautiful. And as we know as creators, like having a mission around what you do and not just doing it just for the hell of it, for the enjoyment of it. And that's let me just say, that's enough reason itself, right? There's enough trouble in our world and enough work and enough stress in our life. Like that's enough. But when you can do it for other reasons beyond just yourself, I just think that's really beautiful. I think that's really awesome. So I give you kudos for that. It's really a good segue because it is fascinating. You say, what kind of drives your travel? And so we had Greg, we had Jeff put together a list.
I know. Well, Josh, this is a travel podcast and about US travel as well. And we've got a Canadian here from, you know, Canada, obviously. But they're built differently, Josh, too. Because, I mean, Jeff, you were saying before you're in a rental car, sleeping in the rental car in Canada. I mean, how thick is your skin, brother? Just saying. Like, you know, how did you keep warm? That's what I know myself. I've actually decked out my four-wheel drive, taken out all the rear seats, etc. I've got my bed in. All laid out there too with all my actual gear, food and clothing all beside me. So electricity, I've got my little Jackery bank, the whole lot. So, mate, I saw your car. You've got like a little sedan thing, but you've got this tent that comes out the rear. Do you still have that thing?
We still got that. Yep. It's the Sportage. So it's a smaller of its class of vehicle, but it's enough that, you can drop the seats down. You got the wide open back that you can lay down and sleep in. It's enough that for somebody my size, I can sleep in there reasonably comfortably. If you sleep in a car, you're never going to have vertical space, but it's enough to draw to on the road. You can pull into a parking lot in the far corner, pop down the seats and crash for the night for a few hours. And then you go keep going on the next day. But yeah, I looked into it and picked up a tent that just hooks on like a glove to the back of the car. So you pop open the back and then it sits on there and then goes around like a glove. And you put the exhaust underneath, so you're not the exhaust isn't going inside. But it's just like a tent. You can lay in there, and then it's got the zip door with the mesh and everything. It lets your feet be able to hang over the edge if you want to, and you're off the ground. It's just so nice and convenient.
Perfect. Now, mate, we did say as well, we've given you a task. We asked for five of your top locations in the US where geocaching has taken you. So let's Josh, what do you think? Let's just go from one to five, mate. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we should. It's just, it's so revealing. It makes complete sense, Jeff, because I'm looking at this list right now. And if you were just to ask an average Canadian, like, what are your top five US places? This would not be the list for most
No, it's not.
But that's what this podcast is all about. It's about the hidden gems. It's about the places that maybe people haven't considered. And Jeff, I see themes because I see the rarity. You're like, I want to, I love the places that nobody maybe knows about, but that are rare, but they're really cool. And if people only knew about them, well, Jeff's going to reveal them now from the Canadian perspective.
Josh, before we do, Josh, we know what they are because we can see the show notes. How many of these five have you been to, just saying?
Well, I know you just brought that up because you want to one-up me. Because I know you've been to more and you are Australian, so good job. I've been to three of the five. How many
I've only been to four out of the five, so I've only got you by one, mate. Not all of them.
And
so.
Jeff has been to five out of five.
Exactly. Well, I've been to four. I've not yet been to one of them, and there's a reason. It's on the bucket list.
Okay, well let's get started. Number one on your list, Jeff. Have you been to this one?
Number one is indeed Mingo. Oh. It is the oldest active cache in the world, in the middle of nowhere.
So Craig, hey, I've been to this one twice. Yes. So maybe that means I'm just as many as you now.
No, because I've been to this one twice. Also.
Okay.
I went to this one by myself, and then I went to this one with you like years later. True. So. Okay.
Well, Craig.
I can also confidently say that I have slept with Mingo.
What? Ooh. Oh, did you just pull up next to it and just sleep in your car at the same location?
Well, you know, it's a road trip and you got to sleep sometime.
Did you keep it in the car next to you? Like, did you actually sleep with it?
Did you snuggle? Did you snuggle with it?
I snuggled up with it right next to where it sits in the corner. Had the sleeping bag out, and the pillow and everything. And
wow.
It was so nice.
Tell me there's a video. Tell me there's a video of this, Jeff.
There is a video.
Well, I'll send me the link and I'll put it in the show notes for everyone. Just saying.
Craig, the dirty show is 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a different type now. This is getting dirty while geocaching, but anyway.
So this thing, Jeff, it was hidden. What? It's going to be 25 years ago, isn't it? Next year. Mm-hmm. So it's like 24 years this geocache has been out in the middle of nowhere. What makes you love it other than the fact that it's just the oldest?
Well, it literally takes hours to get to, and there's like nothing there. It's roadside. It's about as bland of a location as you could possibly think of. But it's the oldest active cache, and it was a simple one to find. It was like, you if you're a geocacher, you've got to get there sometime. It's like a mecca of geocaching sort of thing. You have to get that sometime.
Yeah.
There's no reason that somebody wouldn't be able to get that unless there was stopping them from traveling for some reason.
Right.
It's so simple.
I think it's
even wheelchair accessible now, I believe.
Well, it would be because everything's like all trodden down from people walking back and forth every single day.
So there used to be, this is so sad, there used to be a historical marker, a historical sign, you know, the ones you see like, hey, Mark Twain sat along this shore and thawed up Huckleberry Finn, those kind of signs. Only there was a sign like it saying, this is the world's oldest geocache. We touched it, Craig. Mm-hmm. We were there together.
Yeah, we did.
And it disappeared. Yeah. Somebody stole it.
It's brass, I think. That's why. Like someone stole it for the actual, not for any other reason apart from the metal, I think, to be honest with you.
There probably aren't too many historic markers out there either. Most cities have those kind of information plaques about what happened historically at some location, but they're all over the place. Out there, there's nothing. It's pure metal. Yeah,
exactly.
That's unfortunate.
Exactly. So, Craig, Mingo is close to a city that you and I spent like a good 3 or 4 days in. Colby, Kansas.
Colby in Kansas.
Do you remember Colby?
Of course I remember Colby.
What was great about Colby?
I'll be honest, Josh, what I thought was good about Colby was there's actually some good quality hiders, geocache hiders out there as well. And there were several different cache locations that we went to that were in and around Mingo. Like even, you know, 5 minutes down the road from Mingo, I remember this one really cool cache, and I can't think of the guy's name now, but
Artie Olson.
That's it, Artie Olson. And like he's done this full on outhouse as a cache, you know, and a corner store, like a miniature corner store in a tree as a cache and stuff like that. So there was good quality cache hides is what I remember and what I can recall from that too.
Well, and what happened was there was almost nothing around there until Mingo Madness, the 20th birthday of Mingo, that event. And then, the whole area just populated with all these caches. Something for people to find when they're out finding Mingo. Now it's just littered with caches all over the place. And a lot of really, really good ones, high favorite points.
Yeah, and if you're a geocacher, I would say there's pretty good chance that there will be a Mingo Madness again, not this summer, but next summer. Or next May, a year from today, from now.
25th, yeah.
Yeah. Because that will be the 25th anniversary of that oldest geocache. And it's now become Colby, Kansas, again, kind of in the middle of nowhere, not a tiny, tiny city. I'd say it's about 10,000 people, but littered with great caches. Mm-hmm. It's a great geocaching destination if you're, nearby.
Mm-hmm. There's one thing else, Josh, that I do recall from that as well. I recall going to your Airbnb location, looking up at the night sky because you're in the middle of Colby in Kansas, in the middle of Kansas, there's nothing around, no light, light fog or any of that sort of stuff at all, looking up in the middle of the sky and seeing these lights going straight over in this perfect line.
Aliens.
Starlink. Elon Musk and Starlink crossed over our skies that night. That was really cool.
That was the first time I ever saw it.
Yeah,
and we were like all amazed.
And aliens are real. Yeah.
I've stayed in a lot of Airbnbs. It was one of the best Airbnbs that I've ever stayed in. It was like an old, country shed that is with a garage
silo.
Door.
Wasn't it a silo?
Well, the silo was the shower and the bathroom.
Oh, that's right. Also.
Which feels really weird to be completely naked inside of a silo. It was really an odd feeling. It was an odd feeling, but it was a good feeling. I will say that. Yeah. It was neat. I liked it.
And just to let you know, I've actually got Starlink now. So I actually use those things that we saw all those years ago. I use those devices now on my travels. So thank you, Elon Musk. All right. We're going to move on to number two, Jeff.
Ooh, this one's number great.
This one is fantastic. Let us know, how did you get to this one, Jeff? What is it? And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
So this one is a very natural location just outside of Buffalo, just to the south of Buffalo in New York, and it is called the Eternal Flame Falls. It's there's an earth cache there. There's no physical cache at the flame, but it's pretty much literally exactly as it sounds. There is an eternal flame sitting underneath a little waterfall, and you can walk right up to it. You could put your hand in it if you really want to, if you want to get wet first. But it's a relatively simple hike. You go, it's in a little park area, I think it is, like a little natural area with a trail. So you'd park there. I think the hike is something like maybe half an hour, 30, 40, something around there.
Nice hike too.
Yeah, it was beautiful. And then you start up top, you walk, and you go all the way along the stream. Then you work your way down. You come back up the stream where the water is, and you end up at the waterfall. And you can kind of see it if it's lit. You can kind of see it from a distance, and you walk up to it, and there's just this tiny little flame, maybe about six, seven inches. Maybe there could be two sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it's just completely natural because there's a crack in the rock that goes down to a natural gas well underneath somewhere. And it just keeps going.
Keeps burning.
It's safe enough that if the flame is out, that you can bring a candle or a stick that's lit or something and relight the flame. Yep. It's just so cool. And I don't know if there's any other place that has a natural flame like that's safe to safe to approach and
that's open like to and free for you to visit. I mean, all these places, and we've been to a couple too, Josh, whereby, you know, you go to a place and you think, oh, it's natural, whatever, but no, they've closed it off and someone's making money out of it, and they've got an entry fee, like the what do you call it, the Fountain of Youth, Josh, down in Florida. Oh, yeah. But yeah, Jeff, I noticed as well, you can, as you said, you can relight it as well if it is gone out. Best time to go there would be sometimes during the summer sort of months, for obvious reasons, with snow, et cetera. There has been snow going down there too. Josh, you went there before me. Why? How do I know that? Because Josh leaves an actual virtual Munzee at the car park location saying car park for the eternal flame. So
That was cool. I did it, I think now 2 years ago, and it was a highlight. It was a highlight of that year of just travel and geocaching. And like, of course, this is a place that people know about that aren't geocachers, but you're right, Jeff, it's so rare. It's so unique. Like, I'm sure there are other gas leaks in the world, but the chances that it's behind a waterfall, and somebody would actually just discover that a gas leak is coming out of it. It's so beautiful. You don't come in winter, but I have seen pictures of ice waterfall with the flame behind the ice.
In a way, it's a little better in winter because you're not going to be covered in the water from the waterfall.
Yeah, that's true.
You can
true
walk
too
right up to it and kind of slip inside if you really
exactly
want to.
But in saying that, this is coming from a Canadian, so just I'll just let you know. So he likes the snow. Like, he belongs in the snow.
If I recall, this particular Earth cache was also a statistical draw as well, because it was placed back in 2007, so it's a very old Earth cache.
Oh.
And it's a one difficulty, three terrain, so I think there was something with the DT as well for one of the grids. There was a draw to it that wasn't just because it was an Earth cache. There's more things. So again, geocaching as a tour guide highlights these rare locations.
Yeah.
I do think if you're talking statistics, though, I think it's number one on as far as favorite scale, most favorites, or at least most favorites per premium members on the Wilson scale. Like, I think it's number one. I don't know if I can name.
Wow.
And I don't think I can name an Earth cache that is better than that one.
In terms of the Wilson scale, as they call it, I learned about too on Jeff's latest podcast, just saying. So he spoke about that too.
And just so we don't lose people, because
right
now, we've talked about Earth caches before. Earth caches are like a geocache, but there's no physical container. It is a Earth feature, usually a geological feature, and you go there and you get a picture usually, and then you have to answer some sort of geological science question.
Yeah,
and they're designed for you to learn about the area. So if you're listening, you're like, boy, I don't know what the heck these guys are talking about. That's what it is. It's a special kind of geocache.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And Josh, this is a type of location as well, is that if you're not a geocacher or a Munzee player or anything, it's still an awesome place to attend. You'll love it. And it's on all the maps. It's on Google Earth and all that sort of stuff too. So you can still get the Eternal Flame in just south of Buffalo, New York.
Which I'd say is a really underrated city. Niagara Falls is right there.
Oh, yes.
You go north 45 minutes and you are at Niagara Falls. You can,
but if you want the best experience at Niagara Falls, you got to come to the Canadian
this
side.
This is true, which I did. And I was actually, I went across the border. We've had a whole podcast about it. We can put it in the links. I don't have to rehash it. I went to Haldimand County in Ontario and did their geo tour there, which I don't know if it even exists anymore, but
It was done. It was removed, archived.
But it was Buffalo is just, if you're looking for a fun long weekend, there's a lot to see and do in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm. And we've got a
city
to
think about. Go ahead.
A good friend of ours too, Josh, Nancy.
Oh, yeah.
She's from Buffalo, and you can reach out to her on if you're a geocacher or Munzee player, and she'll happily, she's even got a website too, geocachingcentral.com.
Yeah, she has a whole visitor guide for the area.
Yeah. So make sure you go to Geocaching Central. Yeah, geocachingcentral.com, and it'll be in the show notes anyway for her visitor guide there in Buffalo. Anyway, so, and number three, Jeff, we're going to move on now to number three. Again, I've been to this one. Josh, you haven't.
Oh, I've seen it on video. It's
you have been to it?
It's very frightening.
Really?
Especially what you're about to talk about.
Oh my goodness.
Maybe.
This is the one that's on my bucket list. I had plans to get to this a couple of years ago, and then COVID hit, and it just hasn't materialized. It's in Zion National Park in Utah. Mm-hmm. It is Angel's Landing, and it's about as freaky as it sounds.
Yeah, because if you do the hike, you might become an angel.
This is true.
It's over 5 mile round trip. I say mile because mm-hmm. this is a U.S. podcast.
Correct. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And thank you.
1,500 feet hike, short distance high. So you are taking a hike and you're doing some switchbacks and you're going essentially up the side of a cliff face. Mm-hmm. And if you know Zion National Park, it's like Grand Canyon sort of scale geology. And so you're in this canyon. But in this canyon is kind of this peninsula of really a really tall wall, I guess you could say. I don't know how else you could describe it. And you're climbing up the switchback up the side of the wall to get to the top. And when you're on the top surface, it keeps going up. So you have this really thin, really steep hill that keeps going up and keeps going up. And it gets thinner and thinner and thinner. And eventually, if you're daring enough, you can keep going where there's no handrails and you're, I think that's probably, I think it's about a 10 to 20 meter gap where there's no handrails and sheer cliff on either side.
Yeah.
Enough room for one person, maybe one and a half.
You got to look ahead. Yeah.
You got to look ahead and then you get to the other side and then you're going up again. And it's not like a slanty hill. It's steps like knee and hip high, some steps going up this really steep hill. And eventually you get to the very, very, very top. Small-ish kind of area, and you're just overlooking 360 degrees of canyon all around you.
Wow.
Sheer drop all the way around, and it looks unbelievably surreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they say most anybody could do the hike. It's really getting past the fear.
That's right. Yes. It's a mental thing,
Because there are times when, you're on some really smooth rock because there's so many hikers. The rock gets worn down a lot, so there's some spots where it's not flat. It's slightly angled, and there's really nothing going past. Like, you're going down and then to the sheer drop. So it's you can walk on it without fear. It's just you have to mentally get past this.
I will say, Jeff, when I did it itself, going up wasn't as bad as coming back down. I'll say that. But either way, when you're actually traveling, as you said, it is quite thin and you have to look ahead because if someone's coming towards you, they're going back down, you're going up. You've got to sort of negotiate where you're going to change over from each other too. Plus, here's a tip for you out there. Tips, Josh. I love my tips. Take some sort of packed lunch, etc. with you. Obviously, water as well. Make sure you get plenty of water for this walk. But take a packed lunch. Why take a little packed lunch? Because you'll be greeted at the very top, Josh, by five. I saw five chipmunks that literally live on top of there and they live off everyone's scraps. So they'll come up to you. They'll look at you going, have you got something for me? They'll get it out of your hand. Like, they're like, they live up there. There's like five chipmunks that live up there. So
that's awesome. Wow.
Yeah.
So you did the whole thing, Craig. You walked all the way to the end.
Yeah.
Of it.
Yeah.
That's impressive because, Jeff, people have died on this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people have fallen.
Yep. Yeah. And because of all that, you now, just recently they implemented, you have to have a permit to be able to do the hike.
Yeah.
So they're trying to limit the number of people because it's getting so popular. Yeah. Internet just makes all of these locations, these sites really popular now. And so they've got to try to thin down the herd, make it a little safer and
More
protect natural stuff as well.
Yeah, and more people, more crowding, I'm sure it makes it actually more dangerous just because you're running into people. Or
it reminds me of driving in the UK, because in Scotland especially, there's some roads that are single lane, like not one lane each way, just one lane. Mm-hmm. And when you have two cars coming head on, the first or the closest person to the last little pull off has to reverse.
And then
let the other person go by. There's none of that on this trail. Unless you're lucky to be by a flat area.
Josh, plus what happens is when you like sign up to go on this and put your name down, you actually have to sign a waiver. So if you do die, your family can't sue. So you sign a waiver for it too. So that's all part and parcel. So. But it's not just Angel's Landing in Zion Park. I'll say this as well, Jeff. There's, have you seen the tunnel It's like one of the longest tunnels of somewhere, natural tunnels. And it's a natural tunnel that you drive through, Josh, as well. And it's absolutely beautiful, incredible, let alone all the natural earth caches. We talked about earth caches before with the Eternal Flame. So many different types of earth caches there as well. Like not just your weathering earth cache or this rock earth cache, but there's other earth caches there as well, which is really, really cool. Again, lets you learn about things. But then there's the wildlife. You know, you've got all those mountain goats and whatnot as well. So, it's a beautiful place to go. Yeah. Zion National Park, Jeff. Mate.
There's also another really popular one is the Slot Canyon. Like you've seen so many pictures on the internet there with the rock walls that are all curves and layers and then people walking in this. Like this is all touristy stuff. This is stuff that's accessible to most people. And there's just so much of that in Zion National Park. You'd probably spend a week there and not visit all the locations that you could visit.
Exactly.
Craig, we might have to pick a national park and do a show about a national park or do a show about the top five national parks.
Absolutely.
I have to visit, but before we do that, I have to visit more of them. I know Zion is certainly on my short list. And if you're listening and you want a visual, like there's a lot of good videos. If you just search Angel's Landing, you will see, and you'll be like, wow, that looks amazing. And
well, then Josh,
your next thought will be like, wow, that looks dangerous.
Josh, Jeff, here's a question for both of you then. Do you have your actual national parks passport? There's a passport book that you can have, and you can actually get stickers and stamps with the date of when you actually visit them as well. So do you have a passport, Josh?
I don't. Jeff. It's one of those things. Well, hold on. Before you say, it's one of those things where like, it's like every time I go to a national park, I'm like, I should get the passport. But then I'm always thinking, well, I've been to so many and I missed so many already. No. So then I never get it.
Amazon still sell the stickers. Amazon sell the stickers.
Oh, really? I thought there were stamps. They're not stickers.
There's both. There's stamps and stickers. You can do both. There's a stamp and a sticker side.
Oh, that's cool. So I can make up for it.
So you can like couch log the national parks.
Yeah, exactly. What about you, Jeff? Do you have the national park passport?
This Canadian does not have a U.S. national park passport.
Is there a Canadian? Are there Canadian national parks?
There's provincial parks and national parks. Yeah,
yeah,
same sort of thing.
Do they have a passport program?
I don't think so. Not that I know of.
You know how we love checking off our boxes.
Well, speaking of checking off your boxes, Josh, you personally, you said it before, geotours. There is a national park geotour as well. Did you know that?
It's taking a long time to complete. One catch in every park or something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's cool. So. That's really cool. I would say that would be as cool, if not more cool, than Cache Across America. Can you imagine just be able to say, I've been to every national park? That's so
cool. Yeah, that's really cool.
I feel like
that's
that really would be cool. Something that would be a lot easier to create than to complete.
True. Absolutely.
Yes.
All right, Jeff, moving on now. We're going to number four. Now, Josh, I have not been to this one, but you have.
We've talked about it. We've talked about it. Remember, my daughter came on the Bowling That's Green right. show.
Yes. That was a great
episode. Let's talk about it again because Jeff has been there.
Yes. Tell us, Jeff. Tell us.
Well, I have a video coming for this at some point as well because this was part of the big road trip tour down south to Texas. And so, this is where geocaching is a tour guide. I was just looking for neat, rare, out of the way locations that, you know, you're passing by, you don't want to miss it. And so I was looking for really cool geology and then found this place in Kentucky, the Mammoth Cave. It's this massive underground network of caves. I can't remember if it was the largest in the world or maybe second largest or largest in North America, but it's enormous. And they have multiple tours. So you can take like the bite-sized chunks of various parts of the caves. But I went on the Grand Ave tour, which is pretty much all the major stuff that you can do in one tour. It's a 4-hour hike underground through the Mammoth Caves.
It's cool.
Wow.
And there's multiple, a variety of environments. And so you've got like the really wide and short kind of ovular hallway, lava flows and stuff like that. And then you've got stalactite and all the mineral caves and that kind of, like, it's just a huge variety. And then they light it up with all these colored lights and spotlights, which just looks fantastic. And it's just like, it's another world when you go through this. They have to have bathrooms littered around the trail, the route, because for that 4-hour hike, if you've got kids as well.
Yeah, that's real.
Yeah.
And yeah, like they say, don't go on this unless you know that you can be on your feet for a long time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are times when you can sit and rest, but there's a couple of rests along the tour, but that's the big tour.
Otherwise, yeah, that's a long tour.
Yeah.
I think I did the 90 minute tour.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I mean, I think I said this last time we talked about it. There are rooms that are bigger than football fields.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Underground. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable.
And not caving in. Like it's open. Yeah. Open air.
And they tell the story of the people who initially mapped them out and explored these tunnels, and how I think there was a restaurant down there at one point. That
amazing.
But there was a restaurant in the Mammoth Cave underground, and yeah,
America. I'll just say America.
But there was an earth cache that brought me to that one, and yes. I was like, okay, well, I think there was a virtual as well. But you're there, and you just got to do it. You know, that's the kind of thing where that experience has already been there. It's been there for probably a couple decades or something like that. But somebody published an earth cache where you've got to get information from various spots. Virtually gather information. So like the geocaching brings you right there, and you can have that whole experience that you probably would have passed by it if you were just on a road trip somewhere else. You wouldn't have thought about it.
Well, you can't see it's underground.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of national parks, it is actually a national park.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mammoth Cave National Park, which I didn't get the stamp for. I'm ashamed of myself. Gosh, no. I need to get on top of that. I need to go. Cause my son goes to, school like 30 minutes from Mammoth Cave in Kentucky. Did we say it was in Kentucky? It's in Kentucky.
Yes. It's in Kentucky. Yeah, it's in Kentucky. Josh, just to let you know as well, just to let you know that if you forget your actual passport, they do sell for it at $1 in the stores. They do sell an actual blank sticker that you can stamp the blank sticker and then take that home to your passport or whatever and then stick that into your book. So it's still a stamp of a sticker in a book.
But you still need to go back.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. But if you're there and you go, you know, oh, I forgot my book, my passport, you
can get that
stamp.
Yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm. Good tip, Craig. I like it. All right. Should we go to number five? We talked about five. Oh my gosh, we talked about number five 2 weeks ago in a very different way.
Very different way 2 weeks ago. We won't go back there. Number five, Jeff. Where are you taking us for number five, mate?
Good old San Francisco, California.
You want me to sing the song?
You know you want to.
I left my heart in San Francisco. You were thinking I was going to sing the San Francisco treat. Ding, ding. Do you know that, Craig?
No. I'm Australian. So.
Jeff, do you know that?
No.
He's Canadian. Right?
Okay. It's this. Oh my gosh. This is a podcast about the United States. You guys know nothing. It's rice-a-roni, the San Francisco treat. Ding, ding.
There you go.
There you go.
Let us know in the comments.
And we're done. So thanks for being on the show, Jeff.
What about San Francisco did you love the most, Jeff? What are we talking about here, mate?
So this was, I'd been there now a couple of times for a reason that was pre-geocaching when I was doing another space called Alternate Reality Games, Transmedia Storytelling, that sort of thing. And so I had gone there for a conference, and then another time I went there for another promotional event for Ford. And on those trips, I was, you take in your surroundings. So I had visited Coit Tower, which is the tower at the top of the hill in the middle of San Francisco. And, you know, it's right at the top. It's not super, super tall, the tower itself, but you can go there and you got a 360 view of the whole area, the region. And yeah, you can look out over the bay and you can see Alcatraz, you can see the forest, the Golden Gate Bridge, it's a beautiful, absolutely beautiful location. And, I see people going to San Francisco and I say, you got to go to Coit Tower. It's right there. You can drive up, park, and then just take a little walk up there. It's really nice.
Virtual cache up the top there too, just saying.
Yeah, and that was before I was caching when I went there.
So
now I want to go back and see if I can answer the questions.
Exactly.
Hey, Jeff, when you go back, make sure you get the stamp.
Sorry. So I was there for a conference in San Francisco, and so part of the touring around, I just looked for some nice places to go, and I was like, okay, gotta visit the Redwood Forest as well, and that's the one that's on the other side of the bay, and that's the forest where you've got these massive trees that are many feet wide, and I can't even remember how high, a couple hundred feet or something like that, really, like the largest trees. And you can walk through the forest, you know, you see those pictures of people standing with their arms wide and they're not even covering the width of the base of the tree, or walking inside the tree if there's a hole. Mm-hmm. It's just, I had one picture where a tree had fallen over the trail, and so they had to cut a slice out of the tree to keep the trail open. And yeah, it was like one finger's touching one side of the tree in the on the cut, and then foot reaching to the other side, and this thing is just massive. Yeah. And yeah, it's like you feel so small in that forest. Yeah. It is worth visiting and taking a walk around those trails.
Mm-hmm. Have you been to that one, Josh? Have you been to the Redwood Forest?
No.
Oh, it's beautiful.
I know. It's on my list.
Yeah.
Bucket list.
And Alcatraz, that sounds fascinating.
Oh, man.
Did you take like a tour of Alcatraz?
So yeah, I visited a couple of times now, and the best time was a Ford promotional thing. So I was invited out for an event, more storytelling in real life and all the stuff, all promoting Ford. There was like a murder mystery and crazy stuff. Fun. But for this event, they opened up parts of Alcatraz that are typically closed to the public. So we got to see some of the things that most people don't get to see in Alcatraz. But it's like really cool to go walking through there, because they try to keep up how things were in the past. And so you kind of look back in time, but you see the cells, they have information about, you know, how they broke out of Alcatraz and the end of Alcatraz when they shut down, all of that stuff. It's all there. And it's just fascinating to be able to walk through that and see all of that. It's kind of eerie in a lot of places as well.
I bet.
Please, Jeff, please, on the boat ride back, please, did you say to someone, you know, we just escaped from Alcatraz? Please.
I'm pretty sure that was spoken at least once.
So we have some homework to do because I think Alcatraz, speaking of location-based gaming, would be a perfect location. If it's not, I'm shocked. A perfect location for an adventure lab. Don't you think?
I think it is.
That, I mean, we should look it up. That would be so, it's a perfect location for that.
Everybody break out your phones and open the app.
Just one of us while the other two talk.
Well, and again, for people that aren't as familiar with geocaching, Adventure Labs is a side game of geocaching where it's basically virtual locations, but it's really good for, as Jeff is saying, like very good for storytelling, very good for history. You could do a really cool walking tour through Alcatraz as you're answering questions. That would be just really neat. It kind of reminds me, Craig, of the haunted webcam cache that we found in Indiana, you know, like that kind of location.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. Josh, I don't think there is one on there.
I don't think there is. I'm not seeing one either.
There is. I'm not seeing one on there.
So I see a location.
Oh, so there must be one
that's
location.
Angel Island. Never mind. That's not
Alcatraz. So that's Angel Island.
I wonder, Jeff, do you have to pay to get in?
A typical tour, yes, you would be paying to get in.
So maybe that's the thing. It's like it would have to be like a premium level adventure lab because you have to pay to get in.
But Josh, there is a virtual cache on the island on Alcatraz.
And guess what it's called?
An Earth cache. There's an Earth cache on there too. It's called Escape from Alcatraz. Is the virtual, and the Earth cache is Alcatraz the Rock Formation. Neat.
Okay, yep. There's something there. I mean, geocaching's everywhere, but I still think, gosh, an adventure lab would be so appropriate for like the inside of Alcatraz. Oh my gosh.
I'm sure you could. You could probably have at least one stage in there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'd have all the whole five stages around there somewhere.
Oh, yeah, me too.
So you could get them all. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there you go. So what else did you find? What else did you find, Jeff, in San Francisco?
Now, so the second time that I was there, one of the draws, so I was geocaching at that time. One of the draws was a virtual there. I'm trying to see if I could find it. It's in an arcade, and you had to play one of the arcade games and get a high score. I think it was a top score or in the high score. Josh, it's called high score. That's it.
That's awesome. What? That was a great idea. Let's go.
So you have to take a picture of the scores, and then mm-hmm. that's your name, and then yeah, you can log it found. I was like, oh, it's a 1-1 virtual, and so I had to get it.
So you have to wait. You have to get the high score. So do they like unplug the machine so every day it like starts over? So it just doesn't get higher and higher.
I honestly can't remember. It's been so long. I'm trying to see if I can.
But Josh, if we do it, mate, you know, now if we do it after our previous, you know, games that we play, and if we're with Tim as well, Tim's going to have to play it first to get the high score. Then I'm going to have to play it to beat Tim, and then you're going to play it to beat both of us. Just saying, if it's the other way around, Tim and I aren't going to be able to capture this virtual. Just saying, because you are the best at these games.
So Jeff, what do you remember? What is the name of the arcade? Do you remember?
I'm looking through my finds to try to find that.
Okay.
All right. Meanwhile, Josh, we spoke about it last week as well, last episode, like with the P9, I think it was. Was it P9? Yeah. P39. No, P9.
Crab.
I can't recall.
Crabs at the pier?
There's crabs at the pier there, but there's also the seals with the webcam. Remember, we spoke about that last week.
So. Okay. That's another good one.
Yeah. So, well, but there is crab at the piers as well.
It looks like that there is greater reason to visit San Francisco other than just the water treatment plant.
The plant and the dirty jobs.
The sanitation. Poop in the sewers. Like, if you listened 2 weeks ago, that's what was the big draw, I guess, for Dave Barsky. He really...
Exactly.
I'm putting in quotations. He really enjoyed the...
I do believe that's when he said that that's when they thought to themselves, what the heck are we doing here?
Yeah. Like
what sort of jobs are we doing? So, all right, Jeff, moving on, mate. What else do you have for us? You've got
Craig. Oh, what? I'm going to pause us right here. I have an idea.
What? Tell me.
Bonus content for our patrons.
Okay.
Oh,
we're going to have two more for our patrons only.
There's two more. What are they? You don't know because maybe you're not a patron, but you should be because
exactly.
We give special stuff to our patrons because we love our patrons.
Well, Jeff, why don't we close it out here then, Josh?
Yeah, and
then
let's close it out.
Exactly. Jeff, before we close it on this main channel itself, where can people reach out to you? Where can people find you, mate?
Well, you can find me as Cash the Line on most any social media platform. Kind of active only on a couple, but I've got profiles everywhere. There's TikTok and Threads and X and Instagram, Facebook. There was even one of the other newer ones that wasn't as popular for photos and media. Now I can't remember what it was called. Just all over the place. Just Google Cash the Line and then you'll find it, or the Bruce Zero on Instagram. And awesome. YouTube is Cash the Line, of course.
Awesome. I tell you, people... Jeff puts out some real quality content and he has a really distinctive brand.
Thank you.
Is all his own. And he is just a great voice in our geocaching community. So thanks for what you do, Jeff. And thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate that. I got a question for you though, Jeff, before you go, one more question. Are you going to Geo Woodstock 20 in Flagstaff, Arizona?
I really wish I could. I will be there in spirit.
Oh,
I've been to a couple of Geo Woodstocks now, and I really want to be able to go to the 20, big 20, but the time and the funds aren't there this year, and it's just unfortunate.
I personally am going to miss you, Jeff, because I've only ever met you in person once. Yeah. I met you like vicariously so many times, but actually in person only once. So, but anyway, we're going to miss you, and you're going to miss.
Reunion one day.
We will, but you personally are going to miss out too, because as we said last week, Josh, what did we say? We made the announcement, you and I are going to do a live broadcast from Geo Woodstock. There you go, people.
Year two, so the Saturday of Geo Woodstock at 2:00 on the main stage, the Treasures of Our Town podcast will be live and in person. You could be a part of history with us as we do our podcast live. You could be on the podcast.
Yeah.
Because we're going to be talking all about the 20 different locations that Geo Woodstock has been over the last 20 years in its existence. So it'll be Memorial Day weekend. It's that Saturday. I don't have the date in front of me right now. But and then we're going to be there. We're going to be there from Wednesday to Monday. So if you're there, of course, say hello. But please, please join that audience. Join us. Absolutely. We want to look like, you know, we're legit. Because I think we are.
We are.
But if people show up, it'll be like, you know, kind of underwhelming. When we did this last year, we had a good crowd. We had like 80 people in the crowd. It was awesome.
It was great. It was awesome. And this time, this year is going to be even better. Just saying, it's going to be even bigger and better than the normal.
There'll be more people at Joelstock.
Higher quality audio because Dave Barsky is going to be there for us as well. So it's going to be higher quality audio. So, mate, also we're going to meet up with some Patreons because patrons are going to be there. See, I'm trying to change my name.
I like it.
Patrons are going to be there. And so if people want to reach out and become one of our patrons, Josh, how do they do it, mate?
Yeah, we would really appreciate your support. By supporting us, you're helping us create even better content. Have great guests like Jeff May. Mm. No commercials here. This is the only commercial, and it's very short. So consider joining us at patreon.com/treasuresofourtown. And here's the deal. We are going to give you, and we gave it last time.
If we did.
We're going to give you some bonus content. Jeff is going to tell us his two U.S. bonus locations of places that he has been, and you'll get to hear it there over on Patreon.
Perfect, mate. But if you want to contact us, Josh, like if anyone out there wants to contact us itself and ask us a question or have an idea for us, etc., how do they go about doing that, mate?
Yeah, reach out to us. This is not a one-way conversation. We want to know how you've been upgraded or how you've been delayed. Yes. It's your highs and lows. So reach out to us at Treasures of Our Town Podcast. That's all one word, Treasures of Our Town Podcast @gmail.com. Or, of course, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, X, and YouTube.
So that's it for our show today. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcasting app. And as always, Josh,
may your travels always lead you to the most unexpected places, like Jeff May as he travels throughout the United States, around the world,
Out in the boot.
See you next time.
Bye.
Thanks, Jeff. Bye.